Mary's song, the Magnificat, the song of the angels' announcement to the shepherds, Simeon's song of praise in the temple, the Issues, Etc. book of the month is titled The Songs of Christmas. This new arch book would make a great Christmas gift for children ages 2 through 10. The Songs of Christmas is published by Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, or you can find out more at issuesetc.org. A great stocking stuffer for young children or grandchildren, The Songs of Christmas. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. You might have seen this, a column in yesterday's Washington Post. It starts out just asking the question right up front. Did a man called Jesus of Nazareth walk the earth? It concludes by saying this: given the poor state of existing sources, the atrocious methods used by mainstream biblical historians, the matter will likely never be resolved in some. There are clearly good reasons to doubt the historical Jesus' existence, if not to think it outright improbable. Now, that's a pretty rare view up to this point. Few have been willing to assert that Jesus didn't exist. Even the most liberal Bible scholars will concede that someone resembling, even very faintly, the biblical Jesus must have existed, and a few will say he didn't, although what's their evidence for that? We're going to respond to this column in yesterday's Washington Post. Dr. Paul Meyer joins us. He's professor emeritus of ancient history at Western Michigan University. He's author of several books, including In the Fullness of Time, An Historian Looks at Christmas, Easter, and the Early Church, in his latest publication, The Constantine Codex. Dr. Meyer, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Hello, Todd.
First, I wanted your reaction to the way he ended that piece in the Washington Post, citing the atrocious methods used by mainstream biblical historians. I imagine that one probably caught your attention.
Well, I would say the atrocious works the other way around, the idiocy of doubting that Jesus existed. Well, look, we have people who believe the Holocaust never happened, you know. We have people who believe that we never walked on the moon. It was all filmed in a desert outside of Phoenix, Arizona. You know, and what can you do with incalculable ignorance? It really is predictable, first of all, Todd, because it's the time of the year. Christmas is coming, and therefore the time to knock Christianity is right before Christmas. Or Easter is coming. Do it right before Easter. You know, Jesus never was crucified. Evidently, he sold apples in Jerusalem or something. It's just ridiculous. Things come out, really, the zanies come out at this time of the year. They really do. And nothing against Australia, but I really wonder, you know, what kind of water they drink down there, because probably the worst book ever written was an Australian female author. Her name was Barbara Thiering. And she wrote a book some years ago in which she claimed that Jesus married Mary Magdalene. Well, that's nothing new. But they didn't get along, and so they divorced. And then later on, Jesus married Lydia, the seller of purple. I mean, absolute junk and trash. And now here we have this guy called Lattister. How do you think he pronounces his name?
I do not know.
Yeah, Raphael Lattister. Lattister, something like that, yeah. It's nothing new. We had Atwell, the atheist, doing the same thing. It's just only his impression was absolute madness indeed, saying the Romans invented Christianity. Yeah, sure, the Romans who persecuted the church miserably invented Christianity. Give me a break. And here we have this fellow who comes along using threadbare old arguments about claiming the late writing of the Gospels and all this kind of thing. It isn't true. The earliest writing in the New Testament is St. Paul talking about the resurrection, 1 Corinthians 15, only 19 and a half years after it happened. I don't think that's a long enough time for mythology to develop. And so also in terms of the Gospels, not written, they're anonymous, therefore they're unreliable. They're anonymous because they're humble people. They don't want to call attention to themselves. They want to talk about the message. And we know Luke, for example, is the author of the gospel bearing his name in the book of Acts. And you have, especially in the book of Acts, all these points of tangency with ancient Roman history in terms of the personalities that people, that record. How can they dare say these documents are mythological? They don't know what they're talking about.
So one of the things that's asserted first in the Washington Post piece, and you mentioned it just a moment ago, he says the first problem we encounter when trying to discover more about the historical Jesus is the lack of early sources. Now, what is the basis for that statement, and how do you respond to it? Lack of early sources.
Well, there is no basis for it. In terms of we have sources, sacred and secular. Of course, the sacred source will be in scriptures and the writing of the church fathers. The secular source is in Suetonius, Tacitus, Pliny the Younger, the Jewish rabbinical traditions, Josephus. I mean, it's all over the place. And so how can they make a statement like that? I just have no idea. What happened to honesty? And by the way, I don't blame Letaster or Latister for trying to get his name in print. I blame the editors of the Washington Post for publishing this trash. I blame his publisher in Australia for publishing this trash. I blame the University of Sydney for hiring such a twit in the first place.
So what you're saying there is if the Washington Post did its due diligence in terms of mere journalism, which is fact-finding, they could have easily fact-checked this one and discovered it probably wasn't worth publishing.
Well, they would probably find, in the computer blogs, or there's a JesusNeverExisted.com. You know, there's a computer blog for that. I mean, there's this age-old attempt to do a shortcut on any biblical criticism by simply saying, what, the man never lived? Where are we talking? You know, and that's what they do. And it's just totally ridiculous. And you know, whenever you do discuss Jesus nowadays, you almost got to begin with that one. Yeah, he really did exist. Now let's talk about him, you know? But first, this you have to touch base with these twits. And it takes time, and it's unnecessary, and it gets me so angry that this kind of thing happens. I mean, you know, the idea of selling your soul out to move into a few newspapers or book copies, well, we know how that went with the Da Vinci Code. It's just, you know, all you do is tell a familiar story in a totally different direction. Hey, that's sensational, and that attracts attention. That's sales.
What about the attempt on the part of the author here to kind of brush aside? He mentions the criterion of embarrassment. That is this general principle that if something doesn't something written in an ancient document doesn't wouldn't reflect well on the author, its authenticity is more likely, since people don't generally write against their, or people are unlikely to write against their own interest unless they're trying to convey something true in spite of their own interests. He just kind of sweeps that away with regard to the New Testament.
I agree with the criterion of embarrassment. It's very handy as far as Christians are concerned, because in the Jewish rabbinical traditions, we have the admission that Jesus' body was stolen, and that's embarrassing to them, and so but they were honest enough to put it in. In the New Testament, we have Jesus' brothers not believing him, and that's embarrassing, but it's true, probably. It took the resurrection to convert Jesus' next half-brother, James, who writes this book in the New Testament. So I love the criterion of embarrassment. They just use it for opposite purposes.
He also talks about the criterion of multiple independent attestation, and he says, again, sweeps it away, saying it can't be used. And this is a novel assertion here, that the early sources were clearly not independent. What is that supposed to mean?
I really don't know, because he's talking only about the biblical sources in which the gospel writers may, for instance, have had knowledge of one or two others, or we're not sure of that. But so if you're talking only biblical sources, I can understand that they're not independent necessarily. John certainly was in terms of synoptics, you know that. But I'm talking about both sacred and secular sources. The secular sources are all over the board. I just mentioned their names. And so to suggest that they're not independent is ridiculous. Josephus certainly hasn't read Tacitus, or vice versa, or Pliny in the Act. I mean, my goodness. See, and so many mistakes made in the critique. They're always exaggerated. That they're always not true to the facts. The time is always, they try to expand as far as possible for the writing of those gospels after the event so that mythology can have a chance to creep in. That doesn't work. The trend in biblical scholarship today is giving an earlier dating to the Gospels than that knee-jerk reaction we all had to salute to years ago, and that is that the Synoptic Gospels couldn't possibly have been written before the fall of Jerusalem. Why? Well, because Jesus predicts the fall of Jerusalem. He couldn't have done that. And therefore, they say it had to happen after the fall of Jerusalem, which is ridiculous argumentation of the worst kind. John A.T. Robinson, don't know if you remember him. For a while, Christians didn't like him too much because of his book, Honest to God. But he certainly got Christianity before his deathbed, I'll tell you that, because later he writes a book called Redating the Gospels, and the argument he uses, I think, is absolutely unimpeachable. And that is, take Matthew, for example. Now, Matthew loves prophecy and fulfillment, and so forth. Now, on the way to the cross, he predicts the fall of Jerusalem. Wild horses couldn't have prevented Matthew from saying, then was fulfilled what our Lord predicted, and so forth, when Jerusalem was destroyed by the Romans. He doesn't say that because that hadn't happened yet. And how could Luke write the book of Acts without reference to the horrendous Christian persecutions after Nero illegalized them? Hadn't happened yet. It's the only logical answer. And in case you think this is right-wing obscurantist thinking, I would give you the name of David Noel Friedman, the great sainted editor of the Anchor Bible Dictionary, you know, six volumes of 800 pages each. He inclines definitely toward that view that we got to get back to an earlier dating. These claims by Lattister that these are written much later and it's unreliable, it's just junk.
Dr. Paul Meyer is our guest, Professor Emeritus of Ancient History at Western Michigan University. When we come back, we're going to be talking with him about some of the claims made in the Washington Post piece on Paul. Apparently, the assertion here is that Paul wouldn't require a historical Jesus either. He believes in a celestial Jesus, a heavenly Jesus. Dr. Paul Meyer is author of several books, including In the Fullness of Time, An Historian Looks at Christmas, Easter, and the Early Church, and his latest publication, The Constantine Codex. You can purchase these books under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. When we come back, Paul seems to act like Jesus is a real person, and the Washington Post piece kind of ridiculously says, well, other than his assertion of the historicity of the resurrection, there's no reason to believe Paul thinks that Jesus was a real person either. We'll deal with that right after this.
Rocking around the Christmas tree.
Have a holly jolly Christmas.
It's the most wonderful time.
Jingle bell, jingle bell.
Tired of an endless loop of pop Christmas music? Coming December 24th, sacred music for the Christmas season, LutheranPublicRadio.org. Serenity. Stability. Solemnity. Lutheran Public Radio. Sacred music for the Christmas season. Coming Christmas Eve at LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Fall is here, and it's time to toss your boots and pack your suits to escape the chill of winter. Opening its doors this December in Mexico, Hyatt Ziva is the perfect repose for all-inclusive splendor. With 9 restaurants, bars, and lounges to choose from each day, and sumptuous suites to retreat to each night, Hyatt Ziva is the only one in the region with a secluded beach. And for a limited time, you can enjoy a discount as part of their grand opening celebration. Call your travel agent or visit allinclusive.hyatt.com.
Whether vacationing in Branson or boating on Table Rock Lake, Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran Church in Kimberling City, Missouri is your Christ-confessing congregation. Every week, Christ comes to us through the preached word and sacraments, by which we are strengthened and kept in the one true faith. So come to where Christ comes to you. Come to Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran Church, 103 Kimberling Boulevard in Kimberling City, Missouri. For more, see our website at SOTHL.com.
The faith, once for all, delivered to the saints. You're listening to Issues Etc. The world celebrates its Christmas because its Christ was born and wrapped in swaddling clothes and laid in a manger.
The Church's Christmas, a Christmas sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin.
The Church celebrates her Christmas because the true Christ was crucified and wrapped in burial cloths and laid in the tomb.
For any size year-end donation, we'll send you an audio link of this sermon and an Advent sermon preached by Todd. Donate online at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. Please include your email address in the memo line. Thanks for listening, and thanks for thinking of Issues Etc. when you consider your year-end giving. IssuesETC.org or Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois 62234, and write your email address in the memo line of your check.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Dr. Paul Meyer, Professor Emeritus of Ancient History at Western Michigan University, about a column in yesterday's Washington Post casting doubt on the existence of Jesus. Dr. Meyer, you know, someone listening to us, a layperson, is going to around the water cooler encounter the unbelieving friend. The friend is going to say, look, Washington Post, there you go. They said that Paul, writing in the New Testament, doesn't really require the existence of a historical Jesus, because Paul kind of locates Jesus up in heaven, a celestial heavenly Jesus. How should that person respond?
Well, first of all, it's true to this extent that the first time Paul ever laid eyes on Jesus, he got blinded by him, of course. It was on the road to Damascus, and Jesus, you know, shows up again and says, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? So the original view of Jesus was, yeah, after the resurrection at the right hand of the Father. But this doesn't mean that he in any way discounts his earthly existence, for goodness sake. He talks about what Jesus did on the night that he was betrayed, taking bread, and this is not the koinonia, the communion of Christ's body, and took the cup when he, and so on. So he gives us, maybe we wish he would have given us more earthly details, but he certainly anchors him in reality and history. Of course he does.
How could Paul's theology make any sense if what he's talking about is not
exactly,
is not the events of Jesus' death? I mean, he's talking about the shed blood of Jesus. He's talking very realistic, very down-to-earth terms, obviously focusing upon Christ's death and resurrection, but not to the exclusion of his earthly ministry. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. A question like this wouldn't make any sense to Paul of Tarsus, simply because he knew that Jesus was a historical figure, dealt with him, talked with people who had seen him, obviously the apostles and others, and would get the reports from Luke when he was visiting Jerusalem while Paul was in prison. There's no question. I mean, he would not even understand why the question was asked.
Another assertion made in the Washington Post piece is that there are no existing eyewitness or contemporary accounts of Jesus. He says, all we have are later descriptions of Jesus' life based on non-eyewitnesses, most of whom were obviously biased. Let's deal with the two parts of that objection here. First, that there are no contemporaneous accounts of Jesus.
That's very questionable in and of itself, but overall, the statement could be made of nearly every historian in the ancient world who's talking about earlier events that he wasn't witnessing. That doesn't mean that they weren't real. For instance, I saw one argument against Tacitus's famous reference to the burning of Christians by this terrible book by a Notre Dame author, Candida Moss, The Myth of Persecution. I don't know if you've read it, but it's just a terrible misuse of history. She claims that, well, Tacitus is writing that passage about the persecutions 50 years later, you know. Well, I pointed out in my review, scathing review, that it's like saying today we cannot speak with accuracy about the Kennedy administration. That's your 50 years. That's ridiculous. And in this case, most ancient historians are talking about people they have never seen themselves. We do have other historians who endured what they're talking about. For example, Eusebius, in the last three books of his church history, was eyewitness to many of these things. Well, in Jesus' case, he has only 3 years of public ministry, and therefore, once that original eyewitness generation is gone, how are we to say that their reports weren't accurately trickling down to the authors of the Gospels? Luke is a, for example, and Matthew was a disciple, for gosh sakes. And how can these people then fail to give eyewitness reports? And so it's a very wooden argument, quite frankly.
And you mentioned earlier, John, although he writes later, claims explicitly to be eyewitness at several important points in the course of both his Gospels and his later epistles. He asserts the fact that he was there, saw, touched, handled. Your thoughts there?
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, and I mentioned John A.T. Robinson before. His very last book was The Priority of John. Yeah, he thinks that John was the first gospel written, simply because there are about 20 different names in Jerusalem that are named in John's gospel, whereas only three in the synoptics.
So he thinks that John has more firsthand, better firsthand knowledge.
Exactly.
So just approaching this as an historian, it sounds like what you're saying is most of history, surprise, surprise, is written after the fact. So it we shouldn't treat the biblical sources or the contemporaneous sources of Jesus' life in a shabby manner just because they're written after the fact.
Absolutely. Good way to put it.
Does good, solid historical research leave any doubt whatsoever? Not dealing with the claims of divinity or even the miraculous, just the existence of Jesus. Does good, solid historical research leave any doubt, in your opinion, as an historian of ancient things, that Jesus existed?
No, and I would say 99 out of 100 historians across the world would agree with me on that. But there's no question about the historical Jesus as a man. He is in the warp and woof of ancient history. There's more information on him than any of the great Caesars who lived, and nobody doubts their existence. I just can't understand this incredible double standard that's used in scholarship. You know, what's interesting, Todd, is that secular ancient historians have a far higher view of the historicity and value and reliability of the biblical documents than theologians do. New Testament scholars are the extreme critics, whereas historians, those who are familiar with the limitations we have in ancient history, they have no trouble finding these documents very fascinating and very reliable.
Is there any reason to question the historicity of, because we've talked about the contemporaneous sources, the historicity of the documents that they themselves claim to be eyewitness or just secondhand eyewitness accounts in the New Testament Gospels, from a historian's perspective? Do you see those? Do those documents have the ring of truth to them that you expect to read in ancient history?
Categorically, they have the ring of truth to them. Absolutely, there's no question about it. C.S. Lewis pointed that out too. He says, he called them mythology. Look, I know mythology, he said, and it's nothing like this. and that's so very, very true. No, actually, if you take the literal application of Jesus interacting with the culture of his day and a time and the historicity of the time, just as in the case of St. Paul, the overwhelming evidence is that this is on the same plane of reality as Julius Caesar was stabbed in the Ides of March. I mean, it's just a fact of the past. There's just no evidence to the contrary there at all.
Finally, what do you think about this? Because it had been up to this point, and you've mentioned this several times here, kind of the popular idea that while Jesus certainly existed in some form, he is not the person depicted in the New Testament Gospels. What do you make of the fact that the assertion has now taken another step to that really sound biblical scholarship has never really attempted to do, and that is to assert that Jesus simply didn't exist, that he is fiction from top to bottom? What do you make of that move?
Oh, I think in many ways, just like Satan, we shouldn't spend, you know, too much time on this or too much attention to it, quite frankly, because it is sensational, you know. This undercuts all of Christianity. Therefore, let's publish it, and the public beats a path to the bookstore door, you know, to get the book and so forth. Why give these people the free advertising? It's junk, pure and simple. It goes against all the experience of the entire past, the historiographical details, and just is really a kind of a fool's errand, quite frankly, to venture out and put a totally different spin on something which is going to absolutely attract attention. And I wouldn't want to give it the credit for beginning another new chapter in Jesus research. It's one we ought to simply avoid. In fact, many New Testament scholars, even of the critical variety, bypass any response to this idiotic claim that he never existed. Why waste people's time and paper, on beating a dead horse? It is a dead horse. And periodically, somebody's going to come on. The computer blogs are still there. There's always somebody willing to argue. But now, if you want a trenchant critic of Christianity, take Bart Ehrman. He's the one who shows up all the time. And according to Bart Ehrman, Jesus existed, of course. And the second part of it is not who you think he was and so forth. But the first part, yeah. In fact, he even wrote a book, Jesus Existed. Isn't that kind of Bart Ehrman? To do the obvious. Say that Jesus existed.
Dr. Paul Meyer is Professor Emeritus of Ancient History at Western Michigan University. He's author of several books, including In the Fullness of Time. A historian looks at Christmas, Easter, and the early church in his latest publication, The Constantine Codex. He will also be one of the speakers at next summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference here in Collinsville, Illinois. Dr. Meyer will be making the case for the historical reliability of the New Testament and making the case for biblical archaeology. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, it's Friday, June the 19th and Saturday, June the 20th. This coming summer at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, Illinois. Dr. Meyer, thank you very much for your time.
Good to be with you, Todd. Blessed Christmas.
When we come back, Pastor Joseph Abrahamson joins us. We're going to actually take back up and take another stab at this, not the existence of Jesus, but another alternate theory for Jesus that is often made, and that is that the story of Jesus is essentially a copycat story. They take more ancient pagan god myths or gods myths, and then they're slightly tweaked. You put a beard on him, you put a cross in his hand, voila, you got Jesus, that Jesus is just a copycat of some other mythical ancient god. Pastor Joseph Abrahamson will be our guest on the other side of the break. It's Friday afternoon, the 19th of December. After a conversation with Joseph, we'll spend some time with Holly Shear, talking about teaching our children contentment during the very discontented season of Christmas.
Christ Jesus, the image of the invisible God, for unto us a child is born. The titles of Christ, Good News of Great Joy, the Magnificat, these are some of the Christ-focused themes offered by Ad Crucem this Christmas. Shop adcrucem.com for greeting cards, gifts, housewares, ornaments, music, and much, much more. Available from adcrucem.com, confessing the faith through word and art. adcrucem.com, adcrucem.com.
Hi, this is Pastor Mark Azil, the LCMS Director of Campus Ministry and LCMSU, inviting all college students and those with an interest in campus ministry to join us for Taboo, the 2015 National LCMS Campus Ministry Conference, this coming January 5th through 7th at St. Louis University in St. Louis. That's right, it's Taboo in the Lou. Find out more at lcms.org/LCMSU.
Clear. Concise. Consistent. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thank you for donating almost $80,000 to Issues Etc. in the past month. With 2 weeks left in 2014, we're $22,000 short of expenses. Please consider making a year-end tax-deductible gift online at issuesetc.org, or you can contribute by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for listening, and thanks for thinking of us at the end of the year.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/Luther Academy.